discuss the last chapter of Madhurya Kadambini by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. The last chapter is entitled as Prema. Prema means, what's the meaning of Prema? Prema means love. Love for Krishna. Actually, the word love is exclusively meant for Krishna. Besides Krishna, there is no love. Prema Pumartho Mahan. The ultimate goal of life is to attain this prema, love. And this love is exclusively for Krishna. What goes on in the name of love in this material nature is actually not love, it's lust. And the definition of lust, or rather the difference between love and lust, has been very nicely pointed out in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It has been described that the desire to gratify our own senses is lust. And the desire to give pleasure to Krishna's senses is love. So in the material nature, everyone is busy trying to gratify his senses. And in order to give pleasure to his senses, whatever arrangements or whatever endeavor he makes is plain and simply lust. But real love is love for Krishna. And another definition of love is, or rather the definition of love is, the heart's spontaneous craving to become united with Krishna. Here heart actually means the spirit soul. The spirit soul is situated in the region of the heart. Therefore, sometimes the spirit soul is addressed as heart. When we say my heart's feelings, we actually mean the spirit's feeling, the soul's feeling. My heart's yearning is actually my soul's yearning. But since heart is the closest part of our body, the part of our body that is closest to our spirit soul, therefore, sometimes we identify our spirit soul with our hearts. Therefore, love actually means the spirit soul's intense desire, the spirit soul's spontaneous craving to become united with Krishna. So, in the Vedic philosophy, the ultimate conclusion actually is this love. And the ultimate goal of life is to develop this love for Krishna. And when one develops this love for Krishna, then his life is considered to be successful. The ultimate success of our life depends upon our development of our love for Krishna. If somebody develops that love for Krishna, then he has been successful. And this love is the criteria, love is the qualification, love is the means to enter into the spiritual sky. In order to go back to the spiritual sky, we need only one qualification, and that is to develop our love for Krishna. Those who develop their love for Krishna, they will go back to Godhead. There is no doubt about that. But besides developing this love for Krishna, there is no way we can go back to the spiritual sky. And when this love for Krishna becomes the most purified, then he becomes eligible to attain the highest region of the spiritual sky, known as Vrindavan. Therefore, we must always remember that in Krishna consciousness we have only one goal, only one objective, and that is to develop our love for Krishna. And besides that, we actually don't have any other objective. All that we are doing is simply to develop this love for Krishna. Everything that we are doing, starting from the morning till night, whatever a devotee is doing under the direction of Srila Prabhupada in ISKCON, is simply to develop his love for Krishna. We go to Mangala Arati every morning in order to develop our love for Krishna. We chant in our beads certain number of rounds every day, simply to develop our love for Krishna. We honor Krishna Prasad, simply to develop our love for Krishna. We sing the glory of Krishna loudly with beautiful tune and beat to develop our love for Krishna. We are preaching Krishna consciousness in order to develop our love for Krishna. We distribute Srila Prabhupada's books in order to develop our love for Krishna. So everything that we are doing is simply to develop our love for Krishna. And we must very clearly understand one thing, that when we use the expression love, it's simply meant for Krishna, it's exclusively meant for Krishna. And there cannot be love for anything else or anybody else. Especially in the material platform, it's only a perverted reflection of our love for Krishna. In the material platform, what's going on in the name of love is nothing but lust. And lust is very abominable. Lust is actually diametrically opposed to love. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it has been pointed out that love, or rather lust, is the deep, dark ignorance, kaam andhvatam, the deep dark ignorance, whereas love is brilliant as millions of suns. Kaam andhvatam prem nirmal bhaskar. Lust is like iron and love is like gold. So in the final chapter of Madhurya Pavandini, that love for Krishna has been described. How does a devotee develop this love for Krishna? And what happens to him when he develops this love for Krishna? From the creeper of bhakti, which first sprouted two leaves during sadhana bhakti, now suddenly appear many smooth petals in the form of anubhavas, the symptoms of ecstasy attached to the flower of bhava. These anubhavas are filled with the devotional processes such as hearing and chanting and shine brilliantly at every moment. First forming the flower called bhava, finally they bring forth the fruit called prema. From the flower of bhava, the fruit of prema develops. The juice which comes from the fruit of prema and is tasted has the essential quality of concentrated bliss, and its outstanding nourishing property is its power to attract Krishna. Needless to say, when the devotee begins to taste the juice, he does not take heed of any obstacles. Like a miser feverish for treasure, like a thief who has lost all sense of discretion out of absorption in his job, the devotee loses all sense of self-consciousness. At that stage, devotee doesn't have any awareness of his own self. Therefore, this is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. So literally, Krishna consciousness means to become completely conscious about Krishna. And at that stage one loses consciousness of his own self. He is not conscious of anything else. He is simply conscious about Krishna. And through Krishna, he is also conscious of things that are related to Krishna. And that is the difference between meditation and dubhava, anubhava and prema. In meditation, one's attention, one's consciousness is simply focused on one object, namely Krishna's lotus feet or Krishna himself. But he is not aware of Krishna's surrounding so much. Therefore, the meditation is a much lower level of spiritual absorption. But at this stage of prema, one becomes aware of Krishna's surrounding also. Then he becomes aware of Krishna's devotees, becomes aware of Krishna's activities, becomes aware of Krishna's abode, Krishna's paraphernalia, and in this way he becomes completely Krishna conscious. Conscious only of Krishna. His consciousness at that time becomes one with Krishna's consciousness. Therefore, the ultimate stage of Krishna consciousness is to develop this prema for, or love for Krishna. This stage of intense Krishna consciousness is called Tanmayata. Tan means that. Who is here? Who is that with a capital T? Is Krishna. And Mayata means totally absorbed. One is completely absorbed in Krishna. Sometimes there is an impatience for obtaining the Lord like a hunger which cannot be satisfied even by eating the most tasty foods day and night. Burning like the sun by that anxiety, he is soothed by the coolness of a thousand moons only on testing the form, qualities and sweetness of the Lord, which make a momentary appearance at that time. Simultaneously, this prema arising from his own reservoir increases slightly, and the devotee longs for direct contact with the Lord at every moment. By his intensity of his longing for the Lord, which burns like a conflagration and tears his body like a sharp arrow, he remains unsatisfied with the momentary vision of the Lord's form, qualities and sweetness. He considers friends as useless and dry, overgrown well. His household becomes like a thorn-filled forest. Food becomes totally distasteful. Praise from other devotees is like the biting of a snake. Daily duties become unperformable. All the necessary rituals become an unmanageable burden. The consolation of his comrades is like poison. So this is how a devotee at that stage becomes totally, not only totally disinterested in anything else, but they bear a very, very negative feeling to him, or rather, he feels very negative about all those things. Usually, everybody likes the association of friends, but he feels that the friends are useless and dry. His household becomes like a thorn-filled forest. He feels disgusted with household. He feels tormented due to his household responsibilities. Food becomes totally distasteful. Praise from other devotees is like the biting of a snake. Daily duties become unperformable. All the necessary rituals become an unmanageable burden. the consolation of his comrades is like poison. Though he remains constantly awake, wakefulness is an ocean of repentance, and his sleep seems to be simply fleeing from life. His body seems to be the target of chastisement for the Lord. His life hairs become as lifeless as roasted grains. What he previously took as his life's goal is abandoned as a great calamity. Even thinking of the Lord tears his body asunder. Then Prema, as in the form of a tender kiss, attracts black Krishna and makes him appear to the devotee for a moment. At that time, all the senses of the devotee become the receptacles of all the auspicious qualities of Krishna, his supreme beauty, fragrance, melody, youthfulness, testiness, audacity and karuna. From tasting the extreme sweetness and ever freshness of these qualities of the Lord, a great longing, which at every moment increases, is born in the devotee. Poetic words are not adequate to describe the ocean of bliss which appears at that time. The Lord reveals first his beauty to the eyes of the devotee in this remarkable condition. On account of that sweetness of that beauty, all the senses and the mind take on the quality of eyes, and obstacles such as paralysis, shaking and tears are generated. From this the devotee swoons. At that time, whichever senses is engaged in perceiving Krishna, that senses draws all his consciousness in. He becomes unaware of any other perception, other functions of his senses. Like when he sees Krishna, then he becomes all eyes. At that time he doesn't hear anything, smell anything, touch anything. Similarly, when he smells the fragrance from Krishna's body, then he, all his consciousness becomes just his nose, and all the other senses are dead. Similarly, when he hears Krishna's flute, then he becomes only ears, and all the other senses become. And then finally he swoons, he faints. To console the devotee, the Lord next reveals his fragrance to the nostrils of the devotee. And by this, the devotee's senses take on the quality of the nose in order to smell. Again, the devotee swoons in bliss. The Lord then reveals his sonorous voice to the devotee's ears. All the senses become like ears to hear, and for the third time the devotee faints. The Lord then mercifully gives the touch of his lotus feet, his hands and his breast to the devotee, and the devotee experiences the Lord's fresh youthfulness. To these, in the mood of servant, he bestows his lotus feet on the heads. To those in the mood of friendship, he grasps their hand with his. Of those in the mood of parental affection, with his hand he wipes their tears away. And those in conjugal mood, he embraces, touching with his hands and chest. Then the devotee's senses all take on the sense of touch, and the devotee faints for a fourth time. The Lord then restores him by giving the taste from his own lips. This, however, is revealed only to those in conjugal mood. The devotee's senses take on the sense of taste, and he faints for a fifth time. The blissful swoon is so deep that the Lord must revive him by giving his audacity or generosity. Audacity refers to the state in which simultaneously all of the Lord's qualities his beauty, fragrance, sound, touch and taste suddenly manifest themselves to the devotee's various senses. At the time, prema, which understands the indications of the Lord, increases to the extreme, and though there is a corresponding extreme increase in the craving, this increased prema, becoming like the moon, then creates in the devotee's heart a friction amongst the simultaneous emotions, a conflict of 100 waves of the ocean of bliss, and becomes the beautiful ruling deity of his mind in that condition. It is getting quite deep actually. Recovering consciousness after some moments, the devotee, anxious to see the Lord, again opens his eyes. The thing that was mentioned in the previous, the point that was made in the previous paragraph, maybe I should explain a little bit. Here, the transcendental emotion or the love for Krishna has been compared to an ocean. And in that ocean of love, various waves of emotion appear. And those emotions then conflict with each other. The hundreds of emotions rise forth, and then they conflict with each other, and the devotee becomes confused which one, or rather he becomes completely submerged in that ocean. Recovering consciousness after some moments, the devotee, anxious to see the Lord, again opens his eyes, and not seeing the Lord, he begins to cry. Quote, "Was I merely dreaming? No, I was not dreaming, because I have neither drowsiness nor any contamination in my eyes from sleep. Was it some hallucination? No, for a hallucination could never give such proof. Or was it from some defect in the mind? No, because all the symptoms of an unsteady mind are absent. Was it the fulfillment of some material desire? No, no material fancy could ever approach what I have seen. Was it a momentary meeting with the Lord? No, because it is completely different from all previous visions of the Lord that I remember." Unquote. In this way, the devotee remains in uncertainty. Lying upon the dusty earth, he prays constantly for the same experience, but not obtaining it, he laments. Rolling on the ground, weeps, wounds his own body, faints, recovers, stands, sits, runs about, and wails like a madman. Sometimes he remains silent like a sage, and sometimes like a social misfit. He fails to perform his daily obligatory duties. So, this state of prema has been very beautifully described by Śrīla Sanatana Goswami in his Brihad Bhāgavatamrita. The boy Gop Kumar, the cowherd boy called Gop Kumar, who when developed this intense love for Krishna, then sometimes he would have the darshan of Krishna and sometimes he would not have the darshan of Krishna. And like when he would have the darshan of Krishna, then he would experience what has been described here. Like Krishna, sometimes he would faint, and then Krishna would come and brush the dust out of his body. And getting the touch of Krishna's lotus hand, he would wake up. And then as he would see Krishna, not wake up, he would come back to his senses. And as he would see Krishna, in great eagerness, he would try to catch the end of Krishna's cloth. But then Krishna very quickly moved away. And walking backwards, Krishna would disappear behind some bush. And Gop Kumar would experience such intense emotion that he would faint. And as Śrīla Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur pointed out here, that at that time, sometimes Krishna makes the devotee see his beautiful form. And at that time, a devotee, the form of Krishna is so beautiful that all the consciousness of the devotee will be concentrated on the eyes. And he'll become all eyes in order to see the beauty of Krishna. And by seeing the beauty of Krishna, he'll become so overwhelmed that he'll faint. Then at that time, Krishna would allow the devotee to smell the fragrance from his body. And then the devotee would become all nose, and he would wake up, he would come back to his senses, here smelling the fragrance of Krishna's body. But then he would faint again. Then Krishna would whisper in his ears. Then he would become all ears, and in ecstasy again he would faint. So in this way he would sometimes come back to his senses, and sometimes he would faint. And then he would again come back to his senses by Krishna's mercy and faint. And in this way, sometimes he would wonder whether he is dreaming, or whether he is hallucinating, or whether he is having some kind of momentary vision. But he would reason and understand that it was not actually either of these things. He actually did see Krishna. But then after seeing Krishna, the feeling of separation would become so intensified that he would become literally mad. And he would cry, he would roll in the ground, he would faint, and sometimes water would come from his mouth and nose, saliva would drool from his mouth, and water would run from his nose. And it's a very, very unusual state of consciousness. And that time a devotee feels as if he has fallen in the hand of a great cheater. And he would lament, why did I ever accept this process of Krishna consciousness? For all my life, what I have been doing, all the sadhana, all that I have done, is it just for this? As if I have fallen, just to fall in the hands of a thug, deceiver, a cheater? And therefore at that time he is not able to understand whether he is drowning in an ocean of ecstasy or he is burning in a blazing fire. This very intense feeling of joy sometimes appears to be an unbearable feeling of pain. He could not make out whether he is enjoying or suffering, whether it is intense enjoyment or whether it is intense suffering, whether it is like burning in hellish fire or whether it is being soothed by a nectarian ocean. So at that time, the devotee cannot make out about the state of his existence, in what state of existence he is in. Rupa Goswami mentions that if you have any attachment to family and friends, then don't go to Keshighat, where that blackish boy called Krishna is playing his flute. Because once you see him, or once you hear his flute, then all your material attachments, all your material involvements will be finished. So In a way, he is warning that if you want to enjoy, then don't come to Krishna consciousness. Because the ultimate result of Krishna consciousness is not going to be enjoyable. Be prepared that it's going to be extreme suffering. But actually in the spiritual platform, everything is blissful. Just as the material platform is miserable, in the material platform, suffering is miserable, and enjoyment also is miserable. But in the spiritual, as opposed to that, in the spiritual platform, everything is blissful. In the spiritual platform, the enjoyment is blissful, and the suffering also is blissful. It's all bliss. But it's not enjoyment in that sense. But also in that sense, it is enjoyment to be able to cry like this for Krishna, to be able to experience such intense emotion from Krishna, must be so blissful, must be such a joyful experience. So thus ends the Madhurya Kadambini of Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any comment or question? No, do you have a question? But another way of looking at it is that in a jiva, it acts in the other way actually. Like, if the Krishna can perform all his activities through all his different senses, but if for a jiva, the one sense takes up the role of other senses, like, he other senses become birds, and he just become, all he becomes is eyes, all he becomes is ears, and that's because the jiva is limited. Yeah, infinite. The manifestation in that way. Kind of thing on you? There are two considerations. One is the causeless mercy of Krishna and his devotees, that one makes such rapid advancement, which apparently appears that he already went past some stages. That's one consideration. The other consideration is, as Srila Rupa Goswami mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that the devotional service performed never goes in vain. So it remains in our credit, life after life. So sometimes somebody is already advanced from his previous life. And when he comes to Krishna consciousness, he very quickly comes back to the position where he ended in his previous life. So he starts from there. So apparently it appears that he actually went past those stages very quickly. But here we have to understand that the devotee, in his previous life, he was already situated here. So now when he's starting from this point onwards. Yeah, these material desires or anarthas are always an impediment. They're always an impediment. So therefore we have to always be careful to remove these anarthas. Because as long as the anarthas are there, we won't be able to take the full benefit of Krishna consciousness. One may be very advanced. Say, as you were saying, like say, he is advanced from his previous life, but, you know, he has his anarthas. Therefore, he is not able to take advantage of his previous advancement. Therefore, what happens, you see, he does not reap the benefits until he comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness again and gets initiated. You understand my point? Like, if you notice some devotees, they obviously advanced from the previous lives, but, you know, they are just acting like an ordinary person, they are leading even a rather degraded life. But then they get initiated, and right after initiation you see, you know, like they make such rapid advancement. So here, the initiation actually removed the anarthas. The mercy of the devotee, mercy of the pure devotee removed the anarthas. And he becomes situated on the platform that he is actually in. Therefore, bhajana kriya is the stage before anartha nivritti. Bhajana kriya, and bhajana kriya means accepting initiation and serving under the direction of the spiritual master. So at that stage, anartha nivritti begins. But of course, that's not the end of anartha nivritti. That is, you remember from previous classes, what that stage called? What kind of anartha nivritti takes place due to bhajana kriya? That's called ekadesha vrtti. That one type of anartha is taken care of. But then at the stage of nishtha, it is bahudesha vrtti. Many anarthas are taken care of. Right. And when the anarthas are ultimately removed. Yes, complete anartha nivritti is at the stage of prema, but there is another stage beyond that. Absolute. When does that take place? When one attains the lotus feet of Krishna, that's the absolute anartha nivritti. We can't take it. Yes. What I actually meant is that what goes on in the name of love, in a material platform is lust. Because ultimately everything is a perverse reflection of our love for Krishna. Love is exclusively meant for Krishna. But when it is reflected on others, that love, then it is lust. But there are different degrees of lust, right? You see, some dealings are less lustful, but some are more lustful. But the point is that in the material plane, all the dealings are actually lustful. And the real love is available only on the spiritual platform. Now, for example, but at the same time, you know, like I sort of said, that in the material platform there is no love. But the closest it comes to is the mother's affection for her child. That is the closest relationship to spiritual love. Because that is selfless, considerably selfless. Because a mother would sacrifice anything for the sake of a child. And on a spiritual platform, the devotee would sacrifice everything for the sake of Krishna. Now, as to go back to the initial point, the points that you made, like, yes, one can be engaged in devotional service in any situation that he is in. One can be engaged in devotional service. There is no restriction. Devotional service is meant for everyone. But as one develops his devotion to Krishna, he will actually become detached from his material attachment. But there may be a householder, you know, responsible householder, taking care of his family and in a household in a very nice way, and he becomes engaged in devotional service. But at a very, very, you know, advanced stage of his spiritual development or devotional advancement, he will actually become disgusted with his household, as it has been described in this stage, right? So that the house, his household would appear to be like a thorn-filled forest. And, you know, I mean, this is due to one's natural development of love for Krishna. And there's no denying it. Is that clear, or you have some? When one is a child, he plays on the beach. He builds a castle out of sand. To him and to his friends, it's very important when he's playing. Right? But then he only grows up. Does it have any relevance? It's like just a, you know, playful, you know, building a castle on the sand, with the sand. So similarly, our household responsibilities, our household involvements, you know, no matter how important they may appear to us at certain point of our life, certain point in time, but when one develops his love for Krishna, it becomes totally useless, totally meaningless. You see, the thing is that it shouldn't be done artificially, but my point is that naturally a stage will come due to his spiritual development, when all these will become, all these involvements will become irrelevant, meaningless. Like, as I mentioned, as I read out the stage of prema, I can imagine how intensely one feels for Krishna at that time. And at that time, you know, he doesn't have any concern for anything else. You know, you may offer him the whole world. You may offer him the whole, you may offer him the entire universe. He won't be concerned at all. Well, you see, that stage, you know, as I mentioned earlier, can be reached only by Krishna's mercy, not by any other means. Now the question is whether you would aspire for that stage, right? But my answer to that will be yes, sure. Because that's the thing that really matters to you, to everybody. And everything else is actually irrelevant. For example, you know, I mean, we had our family, we had our friends in previous lives. So many lifetimes we had been here. We had our mothers, fathers, friends, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters. But where are they today? Even if they come in front of us, we won't be able to recognize them. Similarly, those who are friends and, you know, family members, children and parents today, in our next life, we won't even be able to recognize them. So this way, life after life, we are going on, developing some sort of illusory relationship with different individuals, which are actually transient, which are actually affected by time. Like, with the time, with the influence of time, they come to us only for a short while we are together, but then again we get separated from each other. An example has been given, straws and grass floating in a river. Sometimes they come together and then they get separated, not to meet again. So this way we are in the stream of, in the ocean of, or in the river of time, we are floating, and we are coming close to each other for some time, and then we are separating forever. And this is a fact. And no matter how strongly we want to remain together, can we remain together? Yeah, fine. That is a different issue altogether. Like, when you put Krishna in the center, then it is different. Then it is not a material relationship at all. Then you are actually, with Krishna in the center, you are actually elevating yourselves to an eternal platform. And in the eternal platform, the relationships are eternal. Right? Like, you may not, in that platform, you may not become, you may not be related to each other forever as mother and children, but you will be related to each other in your spiritual identity, which is eternal, as servants of Krishna. So you must aspire for that platform. And if you train up your children in that way, right, then if someday you develop that intense love for Krishna, then instead of being sad about your state, your children will become ecstatic about your state, thinking that their mother made it.
Thank you.
question? Yes.
How can we understand that the Pandavas were dedicated when she was in the system? Children would be taken away. How can we understand that we were actually in ecstasy at that time?
You see, as I mentioned earlier, that this spiritual bliss is not really or cannot be understood with the concept of material happiness. It's not a state of material happiness where, you know, one derives his pleasure through union or having things in favorably disposed to his self-gratification. The spiritual bliss is not something like that. Like, as I was mentioning, as I was reading from this chapter, like, a devotee, when he feels the separation from Krishna, is it blissful in that sense? No. It is actually tormenting, it's agonizing, it tears his heart asunder. So obviously, you know, it is not the kind of material enjoyment, the concept of material enjoyment that we have. It's not like that. It is actually an intense suffering, it's an intense pain. But the pain that is experienced for the sake of Krishna is also blissful. But we do not send this material, so we cannot understand what it actually is like. Because in order to understand that, we have to be elevated to that plane, to that state of consciousness. Like, yes, it's true, like when, you know, Devaki, when Krishna was taken away from Devaki, you know, her heart was actually cracking. But, it was blissful, in a spiritual sense. Although in a material sense, it must have been miserable. Therefore, as I was mentioning, in the spiritual platform, everything is blissful. In the spiritual platform, enjoyment is blissful, and suffering is also blissful. And Sanatana Goswami in Brihad Bhagavatam which I pointed out, that actually in Krishna consciousness, separation is more joyful than union, or more relishable than union. He is giving an example. You see, when the gopis meet Krishna, then they are always in anxiety that Krishna may go away at any moment. So, because of that anxiety, they cannot really appreciate Krishna's association so much. Right? But when Krishna is gone, when they are separated from Krishna, then they see Krishna in everything. Due to their intense yearning for Krishna, and they see Krishna in everything. They see Krishna in a tree, they see Krishna in a bumblebee, they see Krishna in everything. They even sometimes become Krishna themselves. They feel that they have become Krishna and they start to act like Krishna. Some gopi lifts her hand as if she feels that she's holding Govardhan's heel. She thinks that, you know, she becomes so absorbed in the thoughts of Krishna that she starts to act like Krishna. And another gopi assures the other, don't worry, I am here, don't become afraid of the demon. No matter how ferocious the demon Keshi may appear like, but I will finish him in no time. So in this way, they get into some kind of transcendental madness. They experience some kind of transcendental madness. And they feel Krishna in everything, Krishna everywhere. Therefore, in separation, they enjoy Krishna more. In separation, they experience more Krishna consciousness than in union.
So it's a source of pleasure in the end.
Source of transcendental pleasure, yes. chanting Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much. All glory is to Shri Prabhupada.